Yo, what's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. Real quick, do me a favor. If you're listening on YouTube, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, and turn on post notifications so you don't miss when we drop new content. Check us out on Apple and Spotify. If you're listening on podcasting platforms, give us a 5-star review if you enjoyed this episode. What's up, everyone? Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there that are tuned in. Happy Sunday to the rest of you guys. Wanted to come on here real quick and talk about Kermani McClain's recent visit to Florida. We're also going to hit on a couple of NFL topics. Why I trust Sean Payton to turn Bo Nix into a superstar. Thoughts on Bryce Young's new supporting cast. And why Mike Tomlin is on the clock this year. Before we begin, here's a quick word from our partner, Mint Mobile. When you pay your phone bill, do you always tell yourself, man, I'm spending way too much money on this shit? Are you looking to save? Our partner Mint Mobile has you covered with plans as low as $15 a month that give you unlimited talk, text, and high-speed data on the nation's largest 5G network. Switch to Mint Mobile right now and start saving on your monthly phone bill. Go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports or click the link in the description or pinned comment below to get access to premium wireless for as low as $15 a month. Right now, new customers that purchase a Mint Mobile plan before May 31st will also receive a 6-month subscription to Paramount Plus for no additional cost. So what are you waiting for? Switching to Mint is easy. It only takes 15 minutes to do. You can get a new phone or keep the current one that you got. Go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports or click the link in the description or pinned comment below and start saving on your monthly phone bill and get a 6-month subscription to Paramount Plus for no additional charge when you sign up before May 31st. Hurry, this offer won't last long, so switch to Mint Mobile today. Kermani McClain is still in the portal, and last week, he visited Florida along with his mom and agent to go see Sunbelt Billy. And this situation for Kermani has gotten really interesting because I've been hearing a lot of rumblings about Kermani, if he potentially does transfer to go play for Sunbelt Billy down there in Gainesville, he could be doing it as a preferred walk-on, which is really insane to think about. Because this dude was the number one cornerback coming out of the 2023 recruiting class. He goes to Colorado, and his time in Boulder was really, really ugly. Okay, when he first got to campus, he was out of shape. He was struggling to learn the playbook. And then when he finally got on the field against USC, he looked really good. And I was thinking to myself, bro, like, what the hell is Deion Sanders thinking? This dude's balling out. And yet you refuse to not give him more playing time. But then after that USC game, we all found out the reason why Kermani McClain wasn't on the field. And that's because he truly wasn't ready. He wasn't committed to going to class. He didn't put the necessary time in to learn the playbook. And it just was a really ugly divorce once he transferred out of Colorado. He ended up throwing shade at Coach Prime in the program. And you would think that with him being a former 5-star, the number one ranked recruit, that you would have a bunch of Power 5 teams like Georgia and Oklahoma lining up to get this guy. But instead, you know, his options are really limited right now. And if he transfers to Florida as a preferred walk-on, this is going to be one of those low-risk, high-reward kind of gets for Sunbelt Billy. The reason for that is because it doesn't matter if you feel Billy Napier is the right coach to be able to have Kermani McClain going on the right path. If you can get somebody of this caliber with this kind of upside and not have to give up a scholarship, you go ahead and you pull the trigger. And this also is a really good situation for Kermani McClain to prove himself. If he really wants to change the narrative about him, not being a hard worker and being a slacker. And this is going back to his high school days. His former high school coach has said similar things about Kermani McClain that many people have voiced their concerns about. But when you have to earn your spot on the team, it just changes a lot of things for you. Because the problem with people like Kermani McClain is that a lot of these recruits, They want everything handed to them. They want to get a lot of NIL money, and they want to be guaranteed playing time. But in the real world, it doesn't work like that. You have to earn everything. It doesn't matter what you did previously at your former job. If you were a manager at McDonald's and you end up getting a job at Apple, you're basically starting from the bottom again. Nobody cares about what you did at McDonald's now because your employer at Apple, they don't know you. Kermani McClain at Florida has a clean slate. Nobody's going to be tripping about what he did at Colorado. And I think that he should go ahead and take the opportunity. I mean, you'll be a preferred walk-on, but if you're as good as what you believe yourself to be, you should be able to take the opportunity, make the team, get a full-time scholarship, and potentially end up getting playing time. And hell, I saw somebody that even floated the idea around of giving him an ugly jersey number, giving him number 45 or 48. Hell, I think they should do what the New England Patriots do with all their rookies, or what they used to do when they had Bill Belichick, which is give all their rookies number 50 or number 60. That's what Florida should do with Kermani McClain. He gets on campus if he transfers there. And if you're Billy Napier, you say, hey, man, like, you got to earn everything, including your jersey number. So we're going to give you number 60. You're going to practice in this number 60. And if you end up doing really well, you make the team, you get some PT, you're going to get a pretty good number. There are a lot of Florida fans that are really against getting Kermani McClain. I've seen some Florida fans on X even type emails to Florida's AD saying how it would be a bad idea to get Kermani McClain. And I definitely understand why Florida fans are against this. Not all of you guys are against it, but a good amount of you are, because you're already pretty decent at cornerback and you don't really have any scholarships to give out for Kermani McClain. But if he's coming in as a preferred walk-on, what do you have to lose? I mean, he's a PWO. You don't have to guarantee him a roster spot. And he's already coming in with the understanding that he has to work hard to just get on the team and to get a scholarship. So I get that it ended up really ugly in Colorado. But to me personally, I felt like him going to Colorado was a bad decision. And it's not because I don't like Deion Sanders. You guys already know that I believe in Deion. I believe in what he's building in there in Colorado is going to work. It's just, I felt the decision was more motivated by his parents. Because you see, unlike the majority of coaches in college football, Deion Sanders is recognized by every parent. Your mom, your great-grandpa, your uncle knows who Deion Sanders is. And a lot of Black folks, when it comes to Deion Sanders, they view this dude's word as gospel. And they always encourage their kids. They're like, man, this is Deion Sanders. You got the opportunity to learn from NFL Hall of Famer, one of the best to play your position. You would be crazy not to take the opportunity. And when you got your parents in your ear, you know, talking about Deion in such a positive light and kind of, you know, influencing your decision, you end up going into a situation that you weren't prepared for. And Kermani McClain wasn't prepared for the coaching that he was going to receive by Coach Prime at Colorado. He was probably thinking that, I'm the number one cornerback. I'm going to come to Boulder. I'm playing for Deion. He's going to fuck with me on the playing time. But nah, it didn't turn out that way, man. And there are a lot of bad habits that Kermani McClain has to get rid of if he wants to end up, you know, reaching his potential. So this would be a really good business move for him. I also think that this will help him mature. This is a humbling experience. I mean, you go from being the number one cornerback prospect to all of a sudden transferring, having to be a preferred walk-on. I've never heard something like this before. So for you Florida fans out here that are against Kermani McClain transferring to UF, if the dude is coming as a PWO, you don't have to give up anything for him unless he actually comes in and performs well, which I believe that he can do. This dude does have a lot of upside. Listen, we know that he looked really terrible at Colorado last year, but let's not ignore the glimpses that he showed of what he could be if he's able to put it all together. Like, this dude was strapping up Brendan Rice, who was a really good receiver. So I would like to believe that we can still get a lot out of Kermani McClain as long as he's in a better situation. And Florida was the school that initially was expected to receive his services before he ended up flipping his commitment to Miami and then ultimately flipping on signing day to Coach Prime in Colorado. Initially, if he just would have stuck with his first initial thought of just going to Florida, I think things would have worked out for him a lot differently. I know the work ethic problems are a big concern, but when you're going to an environment that you weren't really prepared for, you get hit with a hard dose of reality. And that's what happened to Kamani McLean at Colorado. The dude just got humbled. He wasn't ready for it. He's young. He still has a lot of time to grow as a player. We saw Spencer Rattler. You know, in high school, he was really immature. He looked really shitty in that documentary. He goes to OU. He gets benched for Caleb Williams after a really good freshman campaign. Then he transfers to South Carolina. And the dude just becomes a completely different person. Like, if you listen to Spencer Rattler talk now versus how he used to talk when he was coming out of high school, like, I don't even recognize this dude anymore. He went from sounding like a immature teenager to now sounding like a true professional. So if you could see Spencer Rattler make this kind of growth in character by getting a change of scenery, I don't see why we can't see Kamani McLean do the same thing. Like, people make it seem as if this dude is a scrub. He's not a scrub. He definitely can play. The potential and talent is all there. The big question is Billy Napier the right coach to get Kamani McLean on the right path? His high school coach called him out when it came to his work ethic, and he was hoping that him going to Colorado, being coached by Deion Sanders, would be able to help Kamani McLean grow out of those bad habits. But one thing about bad habits is that it's really hard to get rid of them when you've been allowed to, you know, just do whatever you want to and nobody really holds you accountable. Up until Kamani McLean got to Colorado, he never has been held accountable. So I think him going to Florida now, I mean, you got to be accountable. You got to show up to your classes. You got to make sure that you're in shape, that you're learning the playbook, because you're a PWO. There's a good chance that you not only make the team, but, you know, you could be paying for school out of pocket. That's the big knock on being a PWO. It's like you're not on scholarship. Like, everything you got to pay for, and you're not going to have any NIL deals coming your way. Everything is going to have to be earned. So I think that this is a really good situation for Kamani McLean if he does ultimately end up transferring to play for Billy Napier down there in Gainesville. I get the concerns from Florida fans, but I do think that Billy Napier has built a pretty good culture in the locker room. He hasn't built the winning culture, but as far as making sure that players are being held accountable and he's trying to develop them into young men, I think that his culture is pretty good for a dude like Kamani McLean that should come in there hungry and ready to prove himself. If I was him, I'd be like, damn, I went from the number one cornerback prospect in America to now having to go be a preferred walk-on at Florida. If that isn't enough to turn around Kamani McLean and get him motivated and get him on the right path, then nothing ever will be. You know, the criticism that the Broncos have been getting for drafting Bo Nix has been freaking ridiculous to me, because he's easily going to be the best quarterback that this team has had since Peyton Manning. What really has me frustrated with how people are talking about Denver's selection of Bo Nix is that they're just completely ignoring that this dude went to the best head coach of any of the rookie quarterbacks out there. If you were to rank every rookie quarterback in order from who had the best chance to succeed to the worst chance to succeed, Bo Nix should at least be number two behind Caleb Williams. You want to know why? Because if there's anybody whose judgment I trust when it comes to evaluating and developing quarterbacks, it's Sean Payton. Y'all seem to forget that his final season in New Orleans, at one point he was 5-1 on top of the NFC South division with Jameis Winston as his quarterback. Jameis Winston, before he went down that season-ending injury against Tampa Bay, he had the best touchdown-interception ratio in the NFL at 14-2. He also outplayed Aaron Rodgers week one that same season. And even when Jameis Winston went down, you would have thought that the Saints season was over, but Sean Payton was still finding ways to win games with guys like Trevor Siemian and Taysom Hill at quarterback, and they nearly made the playoffs playing Russian roulette at the QB position. Hell, when Teddy Bridgewater was coming off that gruesome leg injury from Minnesota, most of us didn't even know if that dude was going to be able to play football again. He goes to New Orleans, balls out in a few games in replace of Drew Brees due to injuries, and then he ultimately ends up getting paid by the Carolina Panthers thanks to Sean Payton's tutelage. I'm just really confused why people are ignoring the situation and the coach that Bo Nix went to. And you see, the reason why people are giving Sean Payton such a hard time is because there are a lot of hurt feelings with how he handled the Russell Wilson situation. Newsflash, people, it's life. When you don't perform, you don't live up to expectations, you end up getting the pink slip. You get kicked to the curb. There's no way you can justify Denver keeping Sean Payton or Denver keeping Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson played better under Sean Payton than what he did under Nathaniel Hackett, and it wasn't even close. You see, Sean Payton is a realist, and a lot of people hate the truth because you know what they say about the truth? The truth hurts. And Russell Wilson, to be quite frankly with you, just isn't a good quarterback anymore. You get a guy in Bo Nix who's going to be a way better fit in Sean Payton's offense as compared to a guy like Russell Wilson. What does Bo Nix does well that Sean Payton loves? He plays within structure. He gets the ball out fast. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes with the football. He's not bailing out of clean pockets. He can actually run his offense with Bo Nix at quarterback. He couldn't run his offense with Russell Wilson. He had to run the Russell Wilson offense. And the Russell Wilson offense in today's NFL 2023 doesn't work anymore because Russell Wilson is washed. People are talking about let Russ cook. No, Russ can't cook anymore, man. You give Russell Wilson the ingredients, he's still going to burn the food up. So I'm just so sick and tired of these people with these damn sob stories when it comes to Russell Wilson and his time in Denver. You guys make it seem like this dude was mistreated. He was one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the National Football League. If I'm paying you $40 to $50 million a year, I expect you to look like an elite quarterback. You shouldn't need all these things to play up the expectations. The better you are, the higher you get paid, the more you're expected to do with less around you. Patrick Mahomes just won the freaking Super Bowl with guys that we didn't even know who their names are outside of Travis Kelce. Bo Nix going to Sean Payton was the best possible situation he could land in. He's a good fit in this offense. Because he's going to get the ball out fast. He's not going to be making stupid decisions with the football. I love this pick. I don't get why so many people were against it when I saw this pick coming a mile away. Hell, I didn't even know if Bo Nix was even going to be on the board when it was Denver's time to pick unless they traded up for him. Denver needed a quarterback. They got them a quarterback. And now we're trying to criticize who they selected? Like, how can you possibly give the Broncos a C or a D grade for drafting Bo Nix when there was nobody else better on the board? And guess what? What's so ironic about it is that if Denver would have passed on Bo Nix and took best player available like Brock Bowers, guess who would have took him right after? The Las Vegas Raiders, and everybody would have been singing the Raiders' praises. Everybody would have been giving the Raiders a B or A minus grade. But since so many people are bitter with how Sean Payton treated Russell Wilson, you know, people just have a hard time remembering that, hey, Sean Payton is one of the best offensive minds in the history of the NFL. Like, you got people sitting on their couch talking about the draft from the basement, acting like they know more than Sean Payton. You don't know more than Sean Payton, dude. I know everybody has a right to their own opinion. Hell, I'm on here giving my opinion on the situation right now. But if there's anybody whose judgment I'm not going to question when it comes to the quarterback position, it's Sean Payton. He has a right to that privilege. You want to know why? Because this dude was able to have Jameis Winston playing turnover-free football. He was able to do something that no other head coach in the league has been able to do. And if Jameis Winston never got injured that season, the Saints most definitely would have made it to the playoffs, and they possibly could have won that division. So if this dude can turn Jameis Winston into a high-level, efficient, turnover-free quarterback, you mean to tell me you don't believe Sean Payton can turn Bo Nix into a superstar? I have a hard time believing that. The track record speaks for itself. And then for all you fools that keep saying, man, Sean Payton was only good because he had Drew Brees. Newsflash, you do remember that Drew Brees was kicked to the curb by the Los Angeles Chargers or the San Diego Chargers at the time, right? He goes to Sean Payton coming off that shoulder surgery where many doctors, you know, said that it probably wasn't smart for you to sign this dude. He isn't going to have that long of a playing career because of this shoulder surgery. Well, he ends up becoming an all-time great under Sean Payton's tutelage. We give too much praise to the players and not enough praise to the coaches when the coaches have a large influence on determining the success of these players. You want to know why? Because these coaches have the responsibility of putting these quarterbacks in the position to succeed. And Sean Payton couldn't run the kind of offense that he wanted to run because of Russell Wilson. It's a difference if you had to tailor your offense towards the Russell Wilson that we saw in Seattle. But the Russell Wilson that we saw in Denver is cooked. And you guys, to me, upgraded that quarterback. Hell, I would much rather have Bo Nix at quarterback than Russell Wilson right now. And I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and that's why I say that. Like, you guys don't know how frustrated I am to see Russell Wilson penciled in as QB1 on the damn depth chart, bro, because this dude is not good. I promise you guys that you guys are going to get way better quarterback play out of Bo Nix this season than what you've gotten out of Russell Wilson the past 2 years. Stop saying, let Russ cook. Russ can't cook anymore, man. I personally think that Russell Wilson should retire and just become a family man. Honestly, the dude is not good. I don't get why people keep propping this dude up. When one of the best offensive minds in the history of the league is willing to take the NFL's largest dead cap to get rid of you, doesn't that not indicate a red flag? The only reason Pittsburgh signed this dude is because they're paying him the veteran minimum. If Russell Wilson was as good as what many of you people still think he is, he wouldn't be playing for only $1 million this year. Like, you Denver Broncos fans got blessed with Bo Nix at QB, because this was the perfect quarterback for the kind of system that Sean Payton wants to run. What did Bo Nix do well at Oregon? He got the ball out fast. He played well within structure. He took what the defense gave him. He didn't have a lot of turnovers. Those are four things that Sean Payton wants out of his quarterback. Who cares if this dude is a check down merchant? Same thing with Drew Brees. He was a check down merchant. So now we're harping against quarterbacks for taking what the defense gives them. It's not like he was J.J. McCarthy, check down merchant. Like, J.J. McCarthy was a taxi driver. He didn't do anything, pretty much. You could have put Jalen Milroe, Shedeur Sanders, or whoever else behind that Michigan team, and they could have produced similar or better results than what J.J. McCarthy did. If Denver would have drafted J.J. McCarthy, then I would have had a lot more concerns about that selection than them taking Bo Nix. Like, people get so attached to the player, and they just overlook the coaching, the scheme. It's way more that goes into determining how successful these guys become at the next level than just, oh, well, do they have skills that translate to the next level? Like, you got to be able to put these guys in the right system to maximize their talent. And that's just something that I don't hear these people on ESPN or FS1 talking about. They just say, ew, they drafted Bo Nix in the first round. That dude isn't worth a first round pick. Like, who are you to criticize Sean Payton? I know that we come on here and we give our opinions about these coaches, but there's certain coaches that when they make a decision, I keep my mouth closed and I respect it just based on their track record. You know, when Andy Reid traded up to get Patrick Mahomes, Sean Payton was hurt. You want to know why? Because he wanted Patrick Mahomes. So in terms of guys who are really good at developing quarterbacks and getting the most out of the QB position, it doesn't get any better than Sean Payton. Get over the fact that it didn't work out Russell Wilson to do this cook. So you telling me you wanted to run it back for a third straight season with mediocrity at quarterback? You were overpaying this dude. No wonder Sean Payton was always cussing this dude out on the sideline. And you got people in the national media saying, oh, y'all got a lot of respect for Russ with how he handled that situation. Because if I was in his shoes, I would have snapped on Sean Payton. Yeah, you would have snapped on Sean Payton and you would have been put right on that damn bench. Sean Payton is one of the greatest offensive minds in the history of this game. I think he has the right to get the benefit of a doubt when it comes to who he drafts in the first round. Like, how can you give the Broncos a C-plus grade for addressing a need? Are you kidding me? This is why draft grades are so useless to me. This is why I didn't even finish my draft grades, because they're pointless. Most of these teams suck at drafting. You know what's considered a good draft? When you can at least find three or four starting caliber players. That's a good draft. Most of these draft picks don't work out. The Broncos have missed on every single quarterback that they've drafted in the last couple of years before Sean Payton arrived. I think that Sean Payton should be given a little bit more of a benefit of a doubt than what people are giving him. Just trying to say, man, they really drafted a checkdown merchant? Well, duh, because that's what Sean Payton wants out of his quarterback, because that's what his system relies upon. I'm really like, can somebody who isn't on board with the Bo Nix selection make this make sense to me? Why people are so against this move? If there's anybody who can maximize the talent and skill set of Bo Nix, it's Sean Payton. Had Jameis Winston balling, Teddy Bridgewater balling. Teddy Bridgewater got paid because of Sean Payton, by the way. I'm pretty confident Bo Nix is going to have a really great career under Sean Payton playing for the Denver Broncos. Now, we all know that Bryce Young's rookie season was a complete disaster, but the reason for Bryce Young's struggles during his first year was because he was in the worst situation in the National Football League. The Carolina Panthers gave this dude no run game, no offensive line, and his best receiver was old man Adam Thielen. So this offseason, they invested a lot into giving Bryce Young a better supporting cast, and I really love what the Carolina Panthers brought in for him. You trade for Deontay Johnson, who comes from the Pittsburgh Steelers, which as a Steelers fan, I was really hurt to see Deontay Johnson get traded away because I felt like he was the best wide receiver on the roster. And he's going to fix the Panthers' biggest problem, which was their inability to have wide receivers that could actually separate and get open consistently. Deontay Johnson not only is one of the best route runners in the league, but he's one of the best pure separators in the game. He creates a lot of separation on his routes, and he was held back by poor quarterback play. Now, you can say, oh, JT, well, if he had poor quarterback play in Pittsburgh, he's not going to get anything different in Carolina. I strongly disagree with that. There's a reason why Bryce Young went number one overall despite his size. And it's easy for people to fall victim of the recency bias because of how good CJ Stroud was last year. But most people would have took Bryce Young either first or second overall. So if a guy this small has been drafted this high, it's for a very good reason. There's still a lot to love about Bryce Young. And giving him a guy like Deontay Johnson, who can be his go-to target on third down situations because you know he's always going to be open, is going to be a big boost to helping Bryce Young make that big jump in his second year. And I view this Deontay Johnson trade by Carolina in a similar way to when the Buffalo Bills, early into Josh Allen's career, made the trade with the Minnesota Vikings to acquire Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs, he did a really good job at getting open, creating separation, and he ended up becoming one of the best receivers in the game during his time in Buffalo. And I think there's going to be a similar story with Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson should easily have over 1,000 yards this year with the Carolina Panthers. And I wouldn't be surprised if we end up seeing him do more damage than just that. He could easily go for 1,100, 1,200 yards. He's been one of the most underrated wide receivers in the league for a while due to him not having great QB play. Bryce Young getting Deontay Johnson is going to be a big boost for him going into his second season. Then you draft Xavier Leggett in the first round. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I like the player, but I didn't like where Xavier Leggett was drafted, only because he wasn't really all that great at creating separation. And he doesn't really have a lot of proven production outside of that lone season last year that he had for the Gamecocks. But there's a lot to like about Xavier Leggett. He's not the most polished route runner, but this dude is an insane athlete. He's built like a damn monster truck. He's insane after the catch. He's like a running back when he gets the ball in the open field. And most defensive backs, they don't like to tackle. So trying to tackle Xavier Leggett off bubble screens or jet sweeps, yeah, good luck when it comes to that if you're a safety or a cornerback, because Xavier Leggett probably is going to be running guys over like he's playing Madden 25 and he's Marshawn Lynch. He also is really good at winning 50-50 balls downfield, which is something that Carolina's wide receivers were unable to do. There was no wide receiver on this team that you could look at and say, oh, yeah, all Bryce Young has to do is throw it up and they're going to go get it, which is why they couldn't push the football downfield. With Xavier Leggett, with how good of a deep threat he is and his ability to win these 50-50 matchups downfield, you're now going to have somebody who's going to help Bryce Young be better at throwing the deep ball more effectively. Then in the middle portion of the draft, you get running back Jonathan Brooks, who once he gets healthy, he should be the RB1 on this team because their run game was non-existent for the majority of last year. Now, Chuba Hubbard was pretty decent. He's a really good RB2, but it took him a while to become the RB1 only because they paid Miles Sanders so much money. And Miles Sanders, looking back at the decision to sign him, it easily is one of the worst free agency signings that the Carolina Panthers have ever made because this dude is garbage. I'm surprised he's still on the roster. Now, you can say the offensive line didn't do him no favors, but it seems like Miles Sanders just has no vision, and he only benefited these last couple of years playing behind one of the best offensive lines in the NFL down there in Philadelphia. So you get Jonathan Brooks, who many people had either penciled in as RB1 or RB2 in this draft, really good when it comes to finding open running lanes. He has great vision. He's great after contact. I think he's going to turn out being a stud for Carolina. Then you get Jatavion Sanders, another Texas prospect who was really good also during his time with the Longhorns. Looking at these young receivers that the Panthers have brought in, Deontay Johnson, Xavier Leggett, these two guys should have an instant impact on this offense year one under Dave Canales. Dave Canales, his offense is all about timing, getting the ball out fast, getting his quarterback in rhythm, getting a guy like Deontay Johnson that can get open, create a lot of separation, having a guy like Xavier Leggett who can be a good yak threat and a potential very good deep ball threat for you is going to have a big impact on helping Bryce Young make that next jump year two into his career. Now, you still do have Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen, he's only getting older. Eventually, father time is going to come to his door, and eventually he's going to slow down and not be serviceable for you. But he still, this season, should be able to give you a little bit of juice. He doesn't have to be your number one option anymore. He probably should be their third option by the end of next season. If everything goes well for Carolina, Adam Thielen should be wide receiver 3 because Xavier Leggett steps up as your number 2 and Deontay Johnson takes over as your true number 1. Now, Terrence Marshall, Jonathan Mingo, I'm not writing those guys off yet. Okay, Terrence Marshall, I still was a big fan of his when he was coming out of LSU, and I just feel like he's been underutilized, and there hasn't really been a head coach that Carolina has had that's been able to maximize his talent. Jonathan Mingo, he is a lot similar to the player that Xavier Leggett is. Not really a great separator, more so of a yak guy. But he didn't look too bad last year. He did have a couple of big plays here and there. But everybody should benefit with Dave Canales being the head coach now. Everywhere Dave Canales has been, he's had success. He helped Geno Smith resurrect his career in Seattle. He helped Baker Mayfield resurrect his career last year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Everywhere Dave Canales goes, this dude does wonders with whoever is the quarterback. If you can have Geno Smith and Baker Mayfield playing at Pro Bowl caliber levels, I expect for him to be able to do the same thing with Bryce Young, who is a former number one overall pick. Now, I'm going to keep it 100 with you guys. This receiving core that they have, although it is way better than what they had last year, still isn't that good. But with Bryce Young being a former number one pick, he has to be able to overcome certain limitations. And there was a reason why he was expected to be the number one or number two overall selection despite his size. There's still a lot to like about Bryce Young's game. This dude is viewed as a point guard. When he was coming out of Alabama, what he did well was distribute the ball quick, fast, and effectively. And that's what Dave Canales' system is all about. It's all about timing and getting the quarterback into rhythm. And he runs a quarterback-friendly scheme. And with the players that Bryce Young has around him, if he's able to live up to that number one overall pick billing, he should be able to help make up for the rest of this offense not really being all that great. Because, I mean, yeah, there probably are better options out there right now that you would like to be your number two wide receiver, Xavier Leggett. I still don't really know how good he's going to be right out the gate, but I'm just giving him the benefit of the doubt because I'm a big believer in Dave Canales. And really, all you really have to do with Xavier Leggett is just find different ways to get him the football, because with how he's built, he's going to make a lot of big plays after the catch. I'm not really tripping on his inability to not really create a lot of separation when he does a lot of other things really well in his game. So overall, if you're a Panthers fan, you should be really happy with the new supporting cast that Bryce Young is going to be throwing the football to this year. The offensive line, I really think that's a topic for another day, but the offensive line definitely has improved. You bring in two really good offensive guards. Your offensive tackles aren't that bad. Taylor Morton is one of the best right tackles in the game. And Akeem Okwunu, he showed a lot of promise his rookie season. But outside of that, you know, his career has kind of been up and down. But with Dave Canales, you know, I definitely think that this offensive line is going to look a lot better. And overall, you have a way better offense going into this season than what you did last year. Bryce Young had to overcome having two different head coaches in the same season. They fired Frank Wright. Then he had to deal with an interim head coach. He had three different play callers. You had Frank Wright, who caught the plays to start the season. Then Frank Wright gave off play calling to somebody else. And then he took back the play calling. And then once he got fired, somebody else got the play calling again. So Bryce Young went through three offensive coordinator changes within the span of one season, having no run game, no offensive line, and his best wideout being Adam Thielen. When you have to overcome those kinds of limitations, you're bound to be in for a disastrous rookie season. I get that when you get drafted that high, you have to be able to do more with less, because that's just the expectation that comes with getting drafted that high, because you're going to a dysfunctional team. You have to be a game-changing kind of quarterback. But you just can't overcome a complete shit show, which is what Bryce Young was in last year. His rookie season was the equivalent to what Trevor Lawrence was put through his first year at Jacksonville with Urban Meyer. And you saw how better Trevor Lawrence has looked ever since they parted ways with Urban Meyer and they replaced him with Doug Peterson. I think the same is going to happen with Bryce Young. So when it comes to this new supporting cast that Bryce Young is going to have to work with this season, he's better set for success year two than what he was in his first season when this organization pretty much left him out to dry. There's a strong possibility that this could be Mike Tomlin's final season roaming the sidelines as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Him never having a losing season to me is no more than a participation trophy, because it's bare minimum. Think about it. What was the standard of the Steelers organization a decade ago? It was to compete for Super Bowls. It was to be a championship team every single year. And it seems like ever since the Steelers lost to the Packers in the Super Bowl back in 2010, the expectations and the standard has declined every season under Mike Tomlin. And it seems like now people in the media just find ways to praise Mike Tomlin for having winning seasons, but they don't criticize him for his lack of success in the postseason. And that's a really big thing when it comes to coaching for the Pittsburgh Steelers, because you're not defined by what you do in the regular season. Because you winning the division, you having a winning record is what is expected out of you, because that's bare minimum for a franchise like the Pittsburgh Steelers that have six Super Bowls. You see, the Steelers are defined by what they do in the postseason. That's what determines how successful of a season the Steelers have based off if they win a playoff game or not. And the Steelers haven't won a playoff game in damn near a decade. The last playoff game they won, they beat AJ McCarron and the Cincinnati Bengals in a wild card round in a game that they really should have lost, because Cincinnati just pretty much imploded and handed them that win. And with the team that Omar Khan has cooked up this offseason, if Mike Tomlin can't get this squad to no further than the divisional round this year, I believe it's time to move on from him. Now, I'm not somebody who is going to come on here and scream at you, "Oh, we got to fire Mike Tomlin. It's time." Because based off what Mike Tomlin has done the last 3-4 years in Pittsburgh, he has definitely exceeded expectations. For the last 4 years, every offseason, people have always predicted the Steelers to have a losing season. And it's yet to happen just because of how good of a coach Mike Tomlin is. But the problem with that is that the Steelers have reached a certain level where they've plateaued under Mike Tomlin. and hasn't been no progress made. And you can say, well, the teams that Mike Tomlin has had in the past haven't been as good as the one that he has this year, and that's a fair point, which is another reason why this is the year where Mike Tomlin has to win a damn playoff game. If the Cleveland Browns can win 10-plus games with Joe Flacco, you know, him starting for the majority of the season, there's no reason why Mike Tomlin shouldn't be able to have that same success with either Russell Wilson or Justin Fields at the helm at quarterback. And I pray to God that it's Justin Fields, because Russell Wilson is cooked. But, you know, Mike Tomlin is one of those guys that he's able to get the most out of anybody that he has on his team. So if there's anybody who could have Russell Wilson playing a little bit like we saw during his time in Seattle, it is Mike Tomlin. But ultimately, I think that you're either going to need either Russ or Justin Fields to work out. I think that Justin Fields is going to be the answer at quarterback for Pittsburgh. Now, when it comes to, you know, overall how talented this team is, from the defense to the offense, if you just ignore quarterback, this is the best team that Mike Tomlin has had since 2017-2018. This offensive line is stacked. They've invested a lot of capital into making sure that this offensive line is as good as possible. I mean, the last 3 years, the Steelers have been in a rebuild when it comes to the offensive line. You went from having guys like Pouncey and Alejandro Villanueva and Ramon Foster, who were multi-year starters for Pittsburgh, who ended up, you know, the Steelers ended up parting ways with, and they had to get younger. And when you rebuild an offensive line, sometimes it takes a while. But with the offensive line the Steelers have this season, this should be one of the best units in the league. Okay, and if not top five, no worse than top 10. You're also going to be able to run the football a lot more effectively than what you have done in previous years. Like, Arthur Smith is not a bad offensive coordinator. He may not be a great head coach, but when he was calling plays for the Tennessee Titans, he had Ryan Tannehill playing the best football of his career. Ryan Tannehill got paid thanks to Arthur Smith. And I didn't even think that Arthur Smith was that bad of a head coach with the Atlanta Falcons. His only problem was that he couldn't get quarterback right. He doesn't have to worry about the quarterback position because you got two guys that should be good enough to get the job done. Now, are Justin Fields and Russell Wilson potentially going to be able to lead you to a Super Bowl? Probably not, but you should at least be able to win a wild card game with either one of those two guys at the helm. Because let's face it, nobody's expecting the Steelers to be a Super Bowl contender this year. All we're expecting is for the Steelers to build upon what they did last season, making it to the postseason with Mason Rudolph, and be able to at least make it to the divisional round. I don't think my expectations are too high. If Mike Tomlin can't get the Steelers to at least round two, it's time to part ways. And I don't want to hear this, oh, well, who are we going to find that's better than Mike Tomlin? It's not about who are you going to find that's an upgrade right now. It's just about moving on and just getting a new face in there. Because you just can't keep being okay with being an early wild card exit in the postseason every year and just accepting 9-10 win seasons and just giving Mike Tomlin praise for that when the expectations used to be for the Steelers to compete for a Super Bowl every single year, and anything that wasn't close to that was viewed as a disappointment. You know, I just get a little bit annoyed how Steeler fans make me feel so bad for expecting this team to uphold the standard that used to be a decade ago. And it's ironic because Mike Tomlin is always preaching about how the standard is the standard and the standard should never change, when all the standard has done under Mike Tomlin his last decade in Pittsburgh is go down. But you see, I'm never going to call for Mike Tomlin to be fired because the dude has been able to overachieve. But I'm also not going to be upset if the Steelers end up going in a different direction if things don't work out this season. You see, you can't be attached to history if things aren't working out. You want to know what being attached to history gets you? It gets you put in messed up situations. You can't grow if you're still attaching yourself to things in the past just because you're comfortable with it. It's easy to be comfortable having Mike Tomlin as your head coach because you know you're going to be no worse than a 9-win team. You're going to always have a winning record. But you're at a point now where you wonder if you're ever going to be able to win another Super Bowl with Mike Tomlin. And this dude still is pretty young to be a head coach, so he still has two more decades of coaching left in him. And you mean to tell me the Steelers should be okay with potentially having Mike Tomlin around for another decade or two, and the most he's going to get is a wild card loss, that's unacceptable. Eventually, you have to make that dice roll. You have to take that risk and try to find a better upgrade for Mike Tomlin. Now, of course, it's not going to be anybody right now that you look at and say, oh, yeah, they're going to be a clear-cut upgrade for Mike Tomlin. But the same thing could have been said when, you know, Bill Cowher stepped down. Nobody knew Mike Tomlin was going to be that good. You know, he definitely was a rising young assistant when he was under Tony Dungy with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But if you would have told Pittsburgh Steelers fans that Mike Tomlin would turn into as good as a head coach as what he is right now when they first hired him, I don't think nobody's expecting him to be that great. And the Steelers have only had like a handful of head coaches. They are a patient franchise. They don't make a lot of emotional decisions. And Mike Tomlin, I do give him this. He didn't have the ability to pick his last two offensive coordinators. Randy Fichtner, he only hired him because Ben Roethlisberger was cool with him. That's who he got along with. And then Matt Canada, he was a hire made by the Rooneys, which is why it took so long to part ways with him, because Mike Tomlin couldn't just fire the dude because he didn't hire him. That's why he was trying to do all these things to help Matt Canada out, from, you know, going from calling plays in the press box to calling plays on the sidelines, you know, trying to make things a little bit easier for him. But it just didn't work out because that wasn't the guy who he initially hired. Arthur Smith is the first offensive coordinator that Mike Tomlin has truly had his say in being able to hire. And I don't even think Mike Tomlin had too much of a say in picking Kenny Pickett as his quarterback. He definitely had a say in picking Mitch Trubisky as his starting quarterback, because we've listened to several interviews where, you know, Mike Tomlin has been asked about Mitch Trubisky, and he's talked about him in a high regard. Now, obviously, Mike Tomlin, you know, he's a good coach, but he's Stevie Wonder when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks, which is why the Steelers have not been able to go far in the postseason. You see, when Josh Allen had that 53-yard touchdown run and he ran over that damn linebacker, I forgot who it was, that was a prime example of why you need to have a game-changing quarterback to win in the National Football League. Because when you have that, he completely can change the outcome of a game. Josh Allen took over that game against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the wild card round this year. Mason Rudolph didn't play that bad. It's just that Josh Allen was just in a different weight class from Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph was a featherweight going up against a multi-time heavyweight champion, which was Josh Allen. So hopefully if the Steelers can get, you know, average to above average quarterback play, they definitely are more than capable of being able to win a wild card round game and making it to the divisional round. That's all my expectations are for this season. If Mike Tomlin can get the Steelers to the second round of the playoffs this year, he should get a long-term extension for at least 8 to 10 years, because that shows that the Steelers are making progress again and they're not plateaued. That's the issue that I have when it comes to people that defend Mike Tomlin, because if you defend Mike Tomlin, then you're pretty much defending complacency, because that's what the Steelers have become under Mike Tomlin. You know, we keep giving this dude props for never having a losing season, and that's cool, but nobody's going to remember that 2 decades down the road. You want to know why? Because all people remember is the championships, and that was what has defined the Steelers organization. That's why the Steelers are still viewed in such a high regard. You know, the pedigree that this franchise has been built upon, you know, their reputation of being a championship team once they get to the postseason, because that's what the expectations has been set. You know, all these years in Pittsburgh since 2010, the expectations have seemed to go down, where now people excuse Mike Tomlin winning 9-10 games, but yet not holding him accountable for losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars at home. You know, losing 2020 to the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield with the interim head coach. These are unexcusable losses. You can blame Big Ben and his turnover issues all you want to, but ever since then, you know, even last year in the postseason, the Steelers still looked like they were outclassed by a lot. And the Buffalo Bills were banked up. Their defense was injured. Their offense wasn't all that great. The Buffalo Bills were not that good of a team. Pittsburgh definitely could have had a way better outing against Buffalo than what they did in that loss. And then losing to the New England Patriots and the Arizona Cardinals, two of the worst teams in the league, back-to-back weeks, like, those were the moments where I found myself saying, yeah, like, I wouldn't be upset if we moved on from Mike Tomlin. But then, you know, we ended up turning things around, winning with Mason Rudolph and making it to the playoffs. And then I found myself saying, you know, This is the reason why I still want Mike Tomlin to be the head coach, because imagine how good he could be with the actual true quarterback. So this season now, you know, it's put up a shut up for Mike Tomlin. You know, he's on the clock. And if the Steelers don't make it to the divisional round and it's another early round playoff exit and they get sent home to Cancun early, you know, I'm going to be one of those people that's going to be coming on here saying, like, yeah, I'm ready for Mike Tomlin to go. I'm not going to say he needs to get fired, but I'm going to say I'm okay with starting over again. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. If you enjoyed, give us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. Like, subscribe, turn on post notifications if you haven't already, so you make sure that you're up to date with when we drop new content. I know you guys, we got a new camera. We got a better microphone. Excuse if the microphone had a couple of cutting outs during this episode. I'm still trying to work out the little kinks. Like, this is an XLR setup. It's like a professional broadcasting microphone. And, you know, it's a lot of settings that you have to tweak around with it. But, you know, I appreciate you guys for tuning in. You know, I just graduated college. So, you know, we about to scale this channel up. We finna change a lot of different things with how we go about the podcast. We finna have more guests on here. We finna get more creative with the content. Like, I got a lot of things cooked up. But, yeah, hit that like button. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. And I will see you guys shortly with another episode of the JT Sports Podcast.